This song is called Better Now from a greatly underrated rock and roll band out of Georgia, Collective Soul. You're listening to our interview with J.C. Johnson, who's a cryptozoologist pursuing a whole range of strange creatures and weird tales in the Four Corners area. If you're enjoying tonight's program, you can't stay up late with us every night. I urge you to join the Insiders Club for just pennies a day. You can get access to thousands of previous programs, listen to them at your convenience. In the car or at home or wherever you are. It's a pretty good deal. Check it out on the Coast to Coast website. We'll return in a moment. We'll open up the phone lines in a couple of minutes. First, I want to ask JC a couple of questions about Bigfoot. He actually provided some of the samples that went into a controversial DNA study that we've talked about on this program before with Melvick Ketchum. We'll get into that in a moment and then take your questions and comments right after this on Coast to Coast AM. JC, the phone lines are filling up pretty quickly, so I want to ask you just to spend a couple of minutes talking about Bigfoot and DNA samples. It came out, we've had Melba Ketchum on the program. I think what she did was groundbreaking, and she should be applauded for doing that work, trying to get to the bottom of it, analyzing something. All she's got caught is grief. Did you, in fact,
lots of grief.
Yeah. Some of the samples came from you?
Well, actually, there's a video on YouTube called The Harvest. I'm there filming, and I've got two First Nations people there. They're the ones gathering the evidence, and they're wearing gloves. We're doing all the proper procedures for gathering DNA, and it's Brenda Harris. It was her find, very near her home. So I'm there filming while they're gathering the blood, and they're picking up the pieces, and we're bagging up everything of interest, anything that looked like it would be of interest. And we actually, I'm a submitter. I brought the samples home. Nobody else wanted them because they smelled like skunk. It was a skunk that was inside this irrigation pipe. And what this individual did is he couldn't catch the skunk up in the brush. So he carried this huge irrigation pipe down into the field. And I think he felt comfortable letting the skunk out or trying to catch the skunk because he trapped the skunk between his hands inside the pipe. He punched a hole on either side to hold the skunk while he carried the pipe down into the field. Anyway, the skunk bit the crap out of our perpetrator, and he bled a lot, and unfortunately the skunk bled a lot too. But one of the first things he did was pull the skunk scent sack off of the skunk and then let it do the miracle mile and fall down and die. And that's about the time they got on the scene, and they were out there with photographs. And unfortunately, it rained the night before I got out there, or I would have had a lot of exterior blood on top of the pipe that belonged to our perpetrator. Anyway.
And when you say perpetrator, you mean a Sasquatch?
Yeah, at this point in time, yes, it was a Sasquatch, definitely. And basically, we had the DNA press conference in Dallas, October 1st of 2013. And I was there to talk about the chain of custody and the way things were handled and so forth, because typically what we were running into, the mitochondrial DNAs were coming back human, human, human. We had Germanic ancestries. We had Jewish ancestries, Native American ancestries, Asian ancestries. These are human lineages that were coming back in the mitochondrial DNA. The original mothers is what the mitochondrial goes back to. And right away, they were saying cross-contamination, this, that, and otherwise. So I was just there to talk about the chain of custody, the way the samples were handled, the way I stored those samples in my freezer for a few months, and I ate skunk-flavored ice cream. So just the chain of custody. That's what I was there to talk about.
And that's, well, how do you
the YouTube videos up for the press conference, we're not asking for huge tracts of land or anything like that. The only thing I would like to see is some hunter education when you buy your bear tag or your elk tag or whatever, and there's these entities in the area, what to look for, what they look like down on all fours, what they look like standing on two and so forth. Because we do have incidences almost every year out here, especially on the reservation.
I want to get back to the DNA study. Now, you submitted samples from something that was anomalous, some anomalous creature. I guess you would call it anomalous, a Sasquatch. You submitted samples from what you believe to be the real deal. how it was interpreted was something completely different. How it was reported was something completely different. It must be frustrating to know that you gave them something, the real thing, and that no one believes it.
Well, no, the thing is, this isn't going to go away anytime soon, and it's unfortunate. And you saw the emails from Nature magazine. They'd gone through. They were basically ready to sign off on the whole study. And it's unfortunate we didn't have a couple million dollars to grease the wheels, because that's how we get drugs approved, through a lot of FDA and things of that nature. But that's another story. What everyone's got a really hard time with is the mitochondrials being human. That's what everyone's got. They want this to be an ape. Everybody has a pet theory on this. I wanted this to be Gigantopithecus blocky.
Right.
That's what I wanted. I wanted that. Gigantopithecus blocky. That's what I wanted. That was my pet theory. That's what I wanted. I wanted that. But we were all ready to accept whatever the findings of the study were.
The fact is, the study pointed out it's a mix, right?
Coming back. What's that?
It's a mix, right? That's what you have to follow the evidence where it leads, and the evidence suggests that it's a mixture.
Well, when you get into the whole genomes, and that's when we get into the progenitor, the father of the species, there's nothing in GenBank. There's billions of pairs of everything that walks, talks, eats on this planet, leaves piles of doo-doo. We've got their DNA in GenBank. There was nothing in GenBank to compare the whole genome to. It doesn't exist.
Well, that's what I was trying to get you to address. You think that study was legitimate, that the results were legitimate, that they were groundbreaking.
I'm sure, here and there, the human factor involved, mistakes were made, but I know about the mistakes that were made and the different things that were done to correct it and so forth. I think overall, this DNA study with 111 samples from the United States and Canada should be enough without putting a body on the slab for everyone to see, should be enough to raise the speculation. Look at here, we've got something unheard of. We've got something that's not in GenBank. We need to look deeper into this.
I agree. JC, we're going to go to the phone and see what's on people's minds. Phone lines are pretty much full. Ross on the wildcard line calling from Concord, California. You're on with JC. How you doing?
Fine. Hello. I was going to ask, how specifically are you going to become a skinwalker? And if you encounter them on a reservation or wherever, how do you defeat them? How do you protect yourself against them? Or if you're sent by spec ops, how do you annihilate them?
Well, in when they're just wearing the hides and so forth, at that early stage, pulling back the bolt on an AK-47 is pretty effective. I think that's a universal language. But when they become the animal or the emulation of the animal, that's something more frightening. And I think you would have to have a faith-based situation and hopefully a higher power to protect you, because this is demonic and evil.
Is there some kind of ceremony or spell or chant or something like that the DNA use?
I won't involve myself in. I won't partake in that. And I won't. It's just something, I have my protection from the Almighty, and I'm not going to give power to sage or cedar or something of that nature. I have the ultimate power on my side, and I'm still here talking to you. So I think I've got a pretty good thing going on with that, and I don't put power into something else. To me, that's a very dangerous thing. That's your own personal choice and decision if you want to partake in something else, and that's your business. That's up to you. I think at one time and so forth, before there was any kind of organized idea of who the Great Spirit was, I think quite possibly sage and cedar being burned scares the hell out of these things. I really do. Do I give credence and power to that and recommend it? No, I don't.
Sage and cedar burning how you would clean out your house, right?
Yeah. Well, I like the taste of sage in my breakfast sausage, and I love the taste of cedar-fired steaks. But I don't give power to either one of them.
Ross, I hope you got partial answer to your question. Thank you for the call. Sean in Spokane, Washington. Hi, Sean. You're on with J.C. Johnson.
Hi. I had a question and kind of a challenge if you investigate things. I'm disabled, and sometimes I'll have a cousin or a really good friend do what's called night fishing. Have you ever done any of that before?
As far as night vision equipment, or is he doing a remote viewing thing?
No, just going fishing at night for fish.
Oh, night fishing.
Oh, okay, night fishing. I'm sorry.
Yes, okay, I'm telling you a true story that numerous of us have encountered, and I've actually taken a good friend. I have no reason to benefit from this whatsoever. I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't do drugs. So I'm of clear mind, okay, just fishing in the middle of the night on the river. Well, it got to where I'm disabled, so I usually have a big cousin or a big friend go with me. So that way I'm not alone, and being disabled, I don't want nothing take or people in the middle of the night trying to take advantage of me. But when we were fishing, this is very specific. I do bridge fishing, and I was fishing off the bridge, and we seen a woman-like figure that had long, blonde, flowing hair. But it wasn't like hair on your head. It was hair like in between an animal, pelting in between you know, like summer and winter, you know how the coat of an animal changes and sometimes it's hairier nethers and less. But this was a female figure, almost like as your guys' description between me, my cousins, and all of my friends that have gone fishing in this particular area would be a Yeti spaghetti. And I would challenge you to go fishing with me. Because it took 6 months. And no, my friend thought I was crazy and challenged me until, listen, one night, this boulder is still there today. We didn't know this, but there's a security, a college campus that's on the other side of the river, of this bridge. Well, my friend saw the same thing I saw. I was telling him about it, but he didn't tell me. He reeled up his pole, and he was running down the bridge, and he said that something had scared him. I told it to kick rocks, and it threw a boulder, the 6 to 7 of us. Still today cannot move it, and there's nothing that can explain why this boulder is sitting in this part of the river.
And okay, so Sean, let's let JC give us his reaction to what you just told us. That's a pretty good story.
Well, you can only imagine the strength. We've got a chimpanzee that is going to be, and I'm not making reference to genus or anything like that, but a chimpanzee is 10 times stronger than we are, and they're smaller than we are, and they don't have typically the same stature and frame, yet they have that incredible strength. Imagine the hairy hominids, for the most part, most of them, you know, anything above 6 or 7 feet tall, they should be able to lift 20 times what we could easily.
I think you have an invitation from Sean to go fishing.
All righty. Hey, what part of the country are you from, Sean? I think you said Washington.
Yes, I 100% am telling you right now, it'll probably take me maybe once or twice a month, take me out fishing, go with me, bring some electronics, and I assure you within 6 months to a year, you're going to encounter whatever this thing is.
All right, I'll tell you what, I'll put you guys in contact and you can work it out. Thanks, Sean, for the call. Appreciate it. That was good. Benjamin calling from Four Corners area on the wild card line. Hi, Benjamin. You're on with JC Johnson.
Hello, how are you guys?
All right.
I know who this is. How you doing, Benjamin?
I'm actually from Sherbrooke, New Mexico. I'm actually driving home from work right now. And I have a, you know, sort of a question for JC. I'm not sure if he remembers the incident that happened a couple months ago. Maybe it might have been maybe a year ago. The incident that happened in Hogback, New Mexico, about the, I believe, one of the residents there who had their sheep killed and the blood drained. I mean, what actually was that, JC?
You know, I really don't know. And the thing is, we had horseshoe-shaped tracks. They start at one point. And it's like they dropped out of the sky, and then they walked down to the corral and did their business with the sheep. And in the video, it's called Bloodless Carnage at Sheep Pen. You see the four-clawed scrapings on the plywood outside the sheep pen. It was doing that to work up the blood of the sheep and scraping, you know, like fingers on a chalkboard. And it got the sheep all worked up, running in circles, and obviously they were drained of blood. I do believe this was some type of bloodsucker, and it was getting the endorphins worked up in the blood with the sheep by scraping on the outside of the corral on the plywood, and then it went after the sheep. You know, I did horrific mutilations to the sheep. We've got photos and video, and you can go see that, but something that left horseshoe-shaped prints, and it does have a Jersey Devil-type ring to it, you know, but can I explain it? No. All I can do is show you, hey, we've got horseshoe-shaped prints that come out of nowhere and walk down to the corral, and then we've got all these sheep going down with horrific mutilations and essentially being drained of blood. So a Res Devil, not a Jersey Devil, but a Res Devil, I don't know. And
my brother, one of my older brothers, lives like right next to that house, and you know, he didn't hear anything or see anything. But I mean, when you say like horseshoe prints, again, I'm from Shiprock, and I can attest to all the spooky things that JC's been, you know, talking about throughout the whole show. But I'm not sure if you're familiar with the place of Indian Village located in Shiprock. It's almost like a slum sort of, but the area behind those homes and like, you know, it's just hills and whatnot. I have a couple of friends who live there, and they have stories about almost like a centaur like being that speaks only in Navajo and, you know, travels. And I don't know. Have you heard anything like that? You know, for at least from around the area.
You know, going back to this sheep slaughter, this thing had to have wings or just materialize on the spot. I mean, that's the only thing, the physical evidence that's there. And that's what we're left with. That area, the village you're talking about, and this, you know, contact me because I want to talk to you further. I've got some situations where people were found with just their guts eaten out, and they blamed it on dogs. But that's another story. So we'll get into that. So do contact me on Facebook or YouTube. So I want to talk to you.
Yeah, Benjamin, you said that you've grown up in on the reservation or in the Four Corners area. Are you Diné or are you still there?
Oh, yes, I am. I can introduce myself. You know, Shea Benjamin Bigay and Shea. That's how you would say hello. My name is, you know, whatever in Navajo. But yeah, I've grown up here in Shiprock my whole life. I still live in Shiprock. It is on the reservation. But there are a lot of spooky things on the reservation that people just don't have any explanation for.
And the people who are in our listening audience who are going, oh, come on now. It's serious, though. You're serious. This stuff is real.
To an extent. My family, you know, traditional, we, you know, practice the Navajo way, so to speak. And personally, I haven't seen a lot of things, but I've seen some things that I kind of scratch my head at and can't explain. Giant snakes, I believe was a topic earlier on the show. And my dad actually in the 80s was driving home with my older brother, and he was probably like 4 or 5, and there was a line of cars stopped right before the reservation line, and there was a huge snake just traveling across the road, apparently.
Benjamin, the idea about skinwalkers, is that something that's difficult to talk about?
Not so much, because, again, even though I grew up on the reservation and I grew up being Diné or Navajo, we're very contemporary. We have TV, you know, internet, cell phones, obviously. But, you know, skinwalkers, when people talk about skinwalkers, I mean, personally, it doesn't scare me all too much because, again, we have, like, prayers and we have ways. You know, I believe the caller before me was asking about how do you fight or how do you defeat a skinwalker. You know, you don't. You don't fight them. You just don't give power to them. You don't pay any attention to them.
Hey, Benjamin, thank you for calling. I appreciate your input. I hope you'll send me an email, and I think JC wants to hear from you as well. Cranberries, take us into the break. We'll be back with more of your calls for JC Johnson right after this on Coast to Coast. 1972 classic from the Reverend Al Green, Love and Happiness. We got a classic of our own going on here with JC Johnson talking about all kinds of weird stuff. The phone lines are just about full. We get to as many of your questions as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Our final segment with J.C. Johnson, going right back to the phones. Lauren in Florida on the wild card line. Hi, Lauren. You're on with J.C.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
I just wanted to ask J.C., and thank you. This is a great show. What do you think about black-eyed children, and how do you get rid of them before they even get a chance?
Well, that's something I was going to touch on, because I'd gone back to the ultra-terrestrial investigation with Jack Carey. And we went out in the desert to the area where our witnesses believe that some type of entity, government or otherwise, engaged these craft with aircraft fire and miniguns and everything else. So we're out in the middle of nowhere, going across this high desert on a two-track railroad access road. And there, from a distance, is a figure. And our witnesses are driving. Jack Carey and I are in the back seat. And they can't make out the figure until we almost get up on it and finally go, oh, it's a girl. It's a girl. And I go, a girl? And she's out in the middle of nowhere? Okay. I said, well, why don't you slow down and stop, and I can ask if we can help her or something. And as we're driving up on her, I'm looking at her, and she's got kind of a shapely figure from a distance, and she's in this filthy one-piece denim out that ends in a skirt, and it's grease-stained and ripped and torn. And she's got, like, this crazy hair going on. And, you know, immediately I feel sorry for this person. So I go alongside her. They stop the vehicle, and our drivers are talking back and forth. They got a little rap music going, and Jack Carey's sitting next to me. And I roll the window down. I go, hey, are you okay? Do you need a ride? Can we help you? Are you in trouble? And when she made eye contact with me, that was it.
Yeah.
And I don't remember even what she said. Jack remembers what she said. She says, no, I'm fine. I have everything I need. But once I made the eye contact and Jack made the eye contact, she sucked me in, and that was it.
So
Jack
did you see that?
Carey became immediately ill, physically ill. I mean, he was going to blow chow and leave stains.
So did you see that?
Well, he pulled me away from the sight of this woman. It was like, oh, damn, they're slapping me around. JC, come back, come back. And we're telling our drivers to drive, go, go, go. And they finally realize we want to leave the area, and we've left. And I, looking back on this completely demonic, she completely captivated my thought process. And I could see some old sheep herder or somebody out there. They put themselves in situations where you feel sorry for them, the black-eyed children. Oh, mister, please let us in. We're cold. Can we use your phone? Oh, mister, please let us in your car. We're tired. We're hungry. You know, it's typically these demonic situations put themselves in helpless situations where you feel sorry for them. So I'm sorry. Back to your question. I just wanted to share that with you.
How do you
protecting
get away from
yourself?
That?
I mean, you have, if you don't have a compass pointing northward, in my opinion, you're in trouble. If you, you know, there's a relationship with a higher power and a creator of us miserable, wretched human beings that does have an outlet for us. That's all I can recommend. I don't have a magic potion, powder, pill, spell. I don't have that for you.
Lauren, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. East of the Rockies, Stephen in Kentucky. Good morning, Stephen. You're on with J.C. Johnson.
Oh, hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. Long-time listener. Now, I'm an amateur cryptozoological investigator. I have a very large interest in the Bigfoot. They call them many different things around the U.S., Bigfoot, skunk ape, stink man, whatever you will. Now, I had a theory, and I wanted to know your intake on it. You know, you think maybe it could possibly be a creature from older times. Do you think it's possible maybe, just maybe he could be some type of Neanderthal? Like a caveman who's still around today, wandering around, and we just, for some reason, haven't been able to get a hand on him.
We interbred with Neanderthal. We did. And a lot of people with red hair and so forth. You know, we've got genetic traits that show what our ancestors hooked up with. And, you know, Neanderthal is something that's out there. But going back, and this is in reference to the DNA study, we've got human origins on the mitochondrial side, on the mother's side. What we have to question is, who's the father? Who's the daddy? In my opinion, I'm not slamming this down anybody's throat, but in my opinion, we need to see who the the father of the species is. That's what we need to figure out and find out. Is it a Denisovan? Is it something ancient that isn't in the human lineage, that doesn't show up anywhere? Or is it something that goes back to even the biblical ramifications? I don't know. And this is something we don't know. But I do want you to know, in my opinion, there are some human factors involved in this genus and this species.
I think Stephen is asking whether this is actually an ancient race that's been around a long time and is still running around out there in the woods and forests. Right, Stephen?
Yes. And my question, so how do you think he stays hidden so well? Do you think there is a supernatural aspect to it, or do you think it is? I'm confused on how we couldn't be able to find him, but I'm very interested in this subject.
There's a lot of things that would point to something that they have abilities that we don't have. Absolutely.
Yeah, Stephen. Telepathic abilities?
Potentially. But, you know, to have a track line suddenly disappear, where did he go? Did he sprout wings? And that's something that's brought up, too. I mean, we've got a lot of sightings of a large hairy hominid with wings out in this area. More than one time in recent sightings. I mean, it makes you scratch your head. You wonder.
I think, Stephen, what JC is saying is that there might be more to it than just a blood and flesh and blood creature.
Oh, of course. It makes sense. So now it's all over the world, though. You know, you have the Yeti, the Bigfoot, Sasquatch. Everybody has their own version and their own story. Now, do you really think it's that? Why do you think it's the same creature all around the world? Or
I think we've got at least three different body types that we've seen out here and witnessed out here. Three different body types. Do they intermingle, potentially interbreed? Yes, but I think we've got three distinct species out here. Definitely. And I think overall, between North America and South America, from the reports, we've got at least probably 20 different types of hairy hominids of varying sizes.
Stephen, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. West of the Rockies, Ernest in Top Hat, Washington. Good morning, Ernest.
Hey, good morning, George. Good morning, Jason. I'm sorry?
Yeah, he said good morning. Yeah, it's JC, by the way.
Okay, I just wanted to ask you, have you ever heard of a creature, maybe about, I'd say about two and a half feet tall? It's got, like, red hair, and it's kind of like spiky, and I'm serious now, I'm not going to make a joke, and he looks kind of like a voodoo doll. And my second question was, have you ever seen the chupacabra, run across the chupacabra or anything like that? And if I didn't know any better, Jason, I'd say I should have talked to you before, but you guys have a nice night, and thanks, George.
Hold on, Ernest, the spiky haired thing, is that something you've seen?
Well,
we got something.
I can't say that I've seen it, but from a good, my personal source who I find reliable, he said that he saw something like that, and it was in a kit. He said he was out in the woods, and he said it was that there was like a waterfall, and he went inside this little cave, and he said that he saw this waterfall inside the cave, and in front of the waterfall was this thing, and he said it looked like about like brown, but it was like a light brown, but it had spike red hair, and it looked like a voodoo doll mask. There was an old movie with Karen Black in it, and there's these three things, and this old voodoo doll was chasing around this apartment and was trying to kill her, and that's kind of what the face looked like a voodoo doll, he said. But I said, well, what happened? He said it just kind of vanished or something like that. But yeah, that's what I got out of it.
Well, thanks for the call, Ernest. We're going to see what JC has to say about it. Does this ring a bell?
Well, not necessarily like that. I mean, there's a lot of different types of apparitions that people talk about, you know, and there's no real common denominator from shadow people on down to a lot of the different entities that people talk about, especially when they vanish. And that's where, you know, we don't have a lot. Now, if it ran up a trail or climbed a tree to get away from us, then we definitely got a physical entity, you know, things like that. They pop in and out all the time. And I get stuff like that constantly. And, you know, I can wonder and wander, but As far as the chupacabra, real quickly, real briefly, most of your depictions of the Cocopelli, the rock drawings from the Anasazi out here, are very similar to the Cocopelli.
Really?
Rock drawings, and very similar to chupacabra. And just a long story short, years ago on the river, Chief Dan was running point, and something blew up out of the brush, and I paddled up on him, and he just beached his kayak, kind of nosed it up and was looking, and I asked him, what the hell was that? Was it an elk or a deer? And he goes, no, it was a Cocopelli. So later on the fire that evening, we put our chargers up, and they were in their tents, and they, you know, they were sleeping, and I'm like, Cocopelli, that's the flute player. He goes, no, that was the hostet of the Anasazi. He said, when we ran them out of here, a lot of them got left, and they're still down here along the river. And he goes, they're bloodsuckers. And that's not a flute coming out of Cocopelli's mouth. That's a tube that comes out of the back of their mouth to suck the blood after they slash the veins of their victim. So, I mean, you know, I'm drawing correlations, and Leonard hadn't seen any cable TV back then. And I go, Chupacabra. And he goes, Goatsucker? I go, no, that's the popular name for what you just described to me. And the descriptions that have come from the police officers in South America and Mexico, not these mange blue dogs that are running around. I mean, the actual Chupacabra descriptions are very similar to the Cocopelli Anasazi drawings. And I've got Cocopelli down on all fours in rock drawings, sucking blood in rock drawings. I mean, it's very compelling.
Well, I have Cocopelli images all around my house. It sounds a lot less friendly than the flute player.
Brother man, you got the chupacabra all around your house.
JC, is there a story about you losing some time, lost time, while you're on the San Juan River? Does this ring a bell?
Yes, it does. And this was a trip I did with Alex Hearn from Arizona Cryptozoological Society.
Yeah, Alex had called in, left a message.
Yeah, you've had Alex on before, and we got a late start that day, and we had a bunch of wind coming up river, so we pulled off, and I grabbed just a chunk of riverbank, and I said, we'll camp here, and we did. And we got started early enough that next day to be off the water in about 2.5-3 hours, and Leonard Dan and a bunch of our crew was waiting for us at the end. Plus, they wanted to see Alex, and we were going to have a barbecue, and you know, we had big plans. Well, we got a late start. But that morning, I'd scoured the camp. We heard river crossings, weird stuff all night. I'd scoured the camp, no tracks, no nothing. And we're right on the bank of the river, and I look over, a foot and a half away from us, in the water, about an inch and a half, 2 to 2 inches deep, is a perfect Sasquatch print. I'm like, dang, how did they miss that? And he's like, oh, that is so cool. He gets up, gets his camera, I get my camera. We go to take the photo of the footprint in the water, because obviously we can't cast it. And we go to take the picture. What was standing in the print stepped out of it, and it filled in with water and mud.
Meaning whatever was there was invisible.
Yes.
Did you have a missing time experience in connection with this?
Not necessarily, but what happens later going down the river, the air changes, the atmosphere changes, everything changes. And I was warned about this, but it was too late. We were already in it. And I had purple hue skies, pink hue skies, gray skies, black and white hue. And it was like going through the same canyon again and again and again and again. It was horrible. Now, the llamas would run down. The llamas could see us. And the llamas were in, you know, good technicolor and everything else, but everything else was different. It was like we got to the scene before it was ready. I can't explain it. I've never done acid, but this was... would be like a really bad acid trip. When I'd yell back to Alex, it would be like in slow motion, keep paddling, Alex, we'll get out of here. Totally strange. And then we were fighting so hard and paddling so hard. We wanted to get off this river, and everything was in slow motion. All of a sudden, there was a pop, and it was dark, and the air was right. Everything was right. The oxygen was right. Everything. I looked around, and everything looked right again. And it was just a sliver of moon, but I recognized where we were. We were like an hour from our takeout. And it was cold because it was just warm and bright where we just were. And then it was dark, and I was back to us. And Leonard Dan had gone all the way up two track roads and climbed up on mesas and everything to get a look at us. And he saw the disturbance like a fog and you know, it was a warm day, complete sunshine. There's no fog, there's no moisture. Yet we were in this fog, this cloud, whatever it was. Was it a vortex? I can't explain it. But we popped out. What should have took 2.5 hours took us 9 hours.
Wow. Thanks. Alex Hearn sent in a message about that, which is why I asked about it. Try to get one more call in. First time caller, Danny in North Carolina. Welcome to the program, Danny. You're on with J.C. Johnson.
Hi, J.C. Hi, George. It's an honor and a pleasure to be on the show. I want to make a long story really short if I can. I was in Arizona, Sedona, Arizona, Cocopellis everywhere, which is interesting. You know, some have flutes or whatever, and some have cars. Anyway, I was walking from the library, and all of a sudden it turned dark, and I looked up at the Thunder Mountain, and I looked at a star for some reason, and it kind of supernovaed, you know, like got really bright, really big, really fast. You know, all the stars out there, you know, everywhere. One particular star did, then two did, and then a portal opened up of some kind, really bright light, and this giant mastodon type, I don't know if it was a skinwalker or what, landed on four legs. By the way, hello all the Sedona people, love you. And this tail with a had a trident, you know, and I'm freaking out. This thing's, you know, landing. It kind of had like a crocodile head. It was massive, probably 15, 20 feet long or something. Anyway, it looked like a mastodon. It had the plates going on its back, and the tail swooped by my face extremely fast. And then it stood up into some kind of like a dragon type. It was interestingly Egyptian, and it did have glowing red eyes. It turned into like some kind of Egyptian bird with a big gizzard and like the feathers kind of thing, you know. Anyway, so shape shifting and stuff. And you know, I talked to some Hobie friends, and you know, they were certain it was a skinwalker. And they said that sometimes your ancestors come, and you know, it was neat to talk with the Hopis. But this thing pierced my, you know, it was trying to hypnotize me. And I don't like to brag, but I'm not very hypnotizable. And it was intensely scary, but then it turned into.
I tell you what, Danny, we got about a minute left, so you're going to have to get right to it here, so we can get a reaction from JC.
So this thing became a person, and then it floated over to me and cloaked out. And well, the thing, it latched to me somehow. For 6 years, I had to fight it, and I was just going to ask a couple questions about if it was a skinwalker.
You can just ask that, and that's going to be all we're going to have time for. Thanks for the call. That's pretty interesting. JC, your reaction to that?
Well, it's interesting. You know, in the Sedona area, that's such a weird friggin' area. I've spent a great deal of time down there. A portal area, definitely. And do we understand portals? I don't think we do. I really don't. But, you know, you read into the Book of Enoch, not the one by Autumn Williams, which is a good book, but the scriptural Book of Enoch. He's talking about the portals. And, you know, in layman's terms, as best he can, a primitive person of the time, there are portals out there, guys, and there's things we can't explain, and there's things that pass in between here, there, and otherwise that we...
And that's why we have you, man. You're on the trail of all that stuff. J.C. Johnson, thanks very much for joining us. I hope you were glad to come back.
I'd be glad to come back.
All right. We should point out that we have connections on the Coast to Coast website to JC's videos, his Facebook page. It's all free, folks. You can check out his work. And thanks, JC. Appreciate it. Thanks also to Kendall Carver, our earlier guest, and to my colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Nathan Staten, Gina Salvati, Dan Galati, our webmaster, Tim Benall, our producer, Chris Boros. And I'll be back in a couple of weeks. By the way, I spoke to Bob Lazar today. He's going to be my guest next month. So in November, you might want to tune in for that one. That should be a classic. Thanks, everyone. Good night.